97.9 FM, WCHL, and chapelboro.com present The Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show dedicated to getting your community educated, hired, and inspired. The Art of Potential combines real-world knowledge and expertise aimed at helping our community reach their full potential. Now, The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemster with The Art of Potential Show. We are so glad to have you with us today. We have a really interesting show in store for you. We're going to do a show on the road less traveled and what it's like to have to create your own path or choose to create your own path in this world. And we're going to start by talking about two things that are kind of rigid in our society. And one of those is education and the other one is parenting. And we're going to talk about what it's like when you don't fit the mold and how to make, you know, basically shatter the mold and make the world work for you. So that is our theme today. And I'm very excited to have with me Debbie Steer. Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you so much for having me. And that was a really wonderful way of framing the conversation.
Well, it's just, and some of you may know, I always talk to Debbie about the SAT, and I do want to put a plug in for your The Perfect Score Project. If you know anyone who needs the SAT and needs to do better, particularly on the reading and writing of the SAT, go to Debbie's website. It will be on mine, but her program works for that, so you can go on the website and learn more. I don't want to spend too much time on that because that's not our theme, but I do want to let people know that resource is there.
Yeah, interestingly, and we can circle back to this, I came up with that whole concept. You know, it is part of the homeschooling story, and my daughter actually did it with me because we sort of invented it when she was in homeschooling. She was a kid who didn't like to read. So anyway, we can get back to that when you're ready, but it is part of the story.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting. So you have two children. You have Ethan, who is in a traditional four-year school. College, and he went through a traditional high school.
Yep, and very traditional. I mean, he went to a classic all-boys prep school, Jesuit prep school, where, you know, you wear a suit and tie, and it's a very classic curriculum, and he, you know, for the most part, actually not for the most part, he completely fit the mold. I get letters every single day from parents who've read my book. They could say, that's my son. And I've decided, like, okay, you know, here I was thinking he was so unique, or at least the school gave me the impression that he was so unique and, you know, his foibles, you know, forgetting to bring home his work, forgetting to turn in his work, and not always telling the truth. And it turns out, you know, most boys, at least.
I love how you slip that in there.
Are just like he was.
Right. Not telling the truth about the work they didn't turn in. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. So you have, you know, one of these kids that you can put in a traditional setting, and for them, it meets their needs. And, you know, they may not have every thriving moment there, but it's, you know, it's good. It works. You know, the world is peaceful, whatever. But then you also have Daisy. And Daisy is, it sounds like, more of a free spirit and someone for whom a traditional environment just was soul-crushing.
And yeah. So we've now discovered that Daisy is a highly sensitive introvert. And, you know, it's so interesting because I have looked back and I keep meticulous notes. I'm constantly journaling and keeping notes on this and that. And, you know, from the time she was born, I was writing that she was different, she was highly sensitive, she's the most sensitive person, blah, blah, blah. So I knew that she was highly sensitive. I just didn't know that that meant, I didn't know all that that implied. I didn't know that that's, you know, a temperament and that, you know, she actually feels things, whether it's, you know, visual things that she notices or things that she hears or, you know, people's feelings, that sort of thing, in a more acute way than most of us do. And apparently 15% of the population has this trait, and they've now found a gene for it. But we didn't know this until very recently, and, you know, maybe the last 2 years. And until then, I just thought, well, my parenting and everything else works for this kid. I knew she was different, but I didn't quite understand, you know, especially when you've got like a middle school kid, you think, well, they're just being a drama queen, like stop
right.
And go back to school.
Right.
So anyway, yes, I read an article recently called, it was about dandelion and orchid children. And I have one dandelion and I have one orchid. And the orchid children will thrive and become really beautiful and do really well if, you know, the right environment is created. And the dandelion children can have, I mean, both of my kids grew up in the same house with, you know, me. And I did always parent them slightly differently.
Hope so. I mean, one's a boy and one's a girl.
In the sense that, you know, he would always say she never gets punished. And the truth is she never did get punished. And the reason she never got punished is because she was harder on herself than I could ever be on her. And so it's a funny thing to say, but she didn't really need punishing. In fact, she needed the opposite. So in that sense, I did treat them very differently. But in the sense that I didn't realize, you know, all that that meant. Like when she said, you know, I can't go to school, because she started saying that, by the way, in second grade.
Well, and
not until, I don't know, 10th grade that I finally said, Uncle, okay, I'm taking you out in the middle of the year. I can't, you know, there's got to be an easier way.
Right. And so that's actually a question I have, because it started early on. And, you know, I went through this. I have a story of my own just where I don't know what she was at that age, maybe second or third grader, started saying she wouldn't go to school. Now, this is a kid who loves school, but what was happening is that there was a boy in her class who was bullying her in the after-school program.
Right.
So her solution at that age was to not go to school anymore, which, you know, makes completely logical sense.
Yes, absolutely.
But that's what it took for me to go, okay, maybe this really is a problem.
You know. Right. I mean, we had all sorts of that and more. And, you know, the stories are still coming out of, you know, what happened. But in second grade, it was too much for her to bear. In second grade, she had a teacher who would yell a lot and yell at her. And it was at the end of that year, I got her tested, and it turned out that she had dyslexia and auditory processing disorder, blah, blah, blah. But if she would raise her hand and ask a question, the teacher would scream at her. And I didn't believe her. I was like, there's just no way a second grade teacher is screaming. The teacher was screaming, what's your problem? What's your problem? And I was like, there's just no way. And then by the end of the year, her friends were validating and saying, yes, yes, that's what she says. And then at the end of the year, another parent told me they heard from the hallway the teacher yelling at her. And things were, by the end of that school year, her self-esteem was crushed. Like, she really thought something was very wrong with her. And so anyway, I took her out to be tested, and she ended up going to a special school for her to be remediated for dyslexia. And then I put her back in the system. And anyway, so I forget the question was.
My question really is, how did you notice, or what were the triggers that let you know that the public or the traditional setting wasn't going to work for her? And what, you know, in second grade, when you have a teacher yelling at a student, what's your problem? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that's necessarily reflective of a traditional school environment. It sounds like a bully of a teacher.
Yes. I didn't know at that point. Honestly, it didn't occur. I didn't finally throw up my hands and go, it's not going to work until 10th grade.
Yeah.
The middle of 10th grade, because I kept thinking, she switched schools many times. And I kept thinking, well, there's got to be a school that's right for her. You know, and the last school that she went to was a very small all-girl school and a very nurturing, loving environment. But it still wasn't, you know, even close to perfect for many reasons. And so at that point, I thought, you know what, I'm so tired of fighting the system. I'm going to see if I can do it myself. So, looking back, I knew in second grade, but I was working full time when you were saying that you chose a career where you could be around with your kids. I didn't make that decision. It didn't occur to me. And, you know, I didn't have parents who did that. I had parents who encouraged me, you know, to climb the corporate ladder, and so I was doing what I thought I was supposed to be doing, and I was good at it, but it meant that I was commuting to and from, which then made my day longer at work, and my days shorter with my children, and she was having a really hard time, and I, you know, I'm pretty tough, and I didn't exactly realize what that meant, you know, for a highly sensitive child to have a really hard time and have a mom who's commuting back and forth. And like, it just felt like, well, there's just no way I could ever homeschool. I mean, she wanted it in second grade. She said, I want to be homeschooled. Neither of us quite knew what that was, but it was just an absurd, you know,
right.
It was like totally ridiculous. Like, well, of course not. And then
right.
you know, she asked for many, many, many times after that, and it wasn't until 10th grade that I finally said,
okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're going to take a
what I was doing.
Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear more about that transition. You are listening to the Art of Potential show. Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with the Art of Potential show, and we are talking about what it's like to take the road less traveled. We're talking about how to do that in two really traditional ways, which is parenting and education. The theme right now we're talking about is homeschooling. Like, what are the decisions that drive it? But on a deeper level is, how do you go about as a parent creating the internal environment that your kid can take with them out into the world? Because that's essentially what we're trying to do as parents. My guest is Debbie Steer. And Debbie is, you know, we had just mentioned she's had a son do everything the traditional way. And then she has a highly sensitive daughter, Daisy, who the mold just did not fit. So, Debbie, we just ended the last segment with you saying you took her out her sophomore year of high school and decided to homeschool her.
Yep, in the middle of the school year. I had to move in 2 weeks, and I had a book that was like a year overdue to the publisher. So it was the most inconvenient time in the world to decide to homeschool. But, you know, it just became really clear that it was too much for her to bear. And at that point, I don't know, there must have been something inside of me that knew it to finally bust a move like that, because it is a pretty radical thing to do. I mean, I had been thinking about it and researching it for years, but the decision to do it really came pretty quickly once I did. And by the way, in the beginning, I didn't have a plan or anything. That all unfolded as we went along. I mean, if I had, you know, done it properly, there's many ways to have a fabulous plan. And I have a whole library of books, you know, about all sorts of different plans.
Right.
And if I had done it, you know, in a more orchestrated manner, I would have, you know, I would have done that, but I didn't. The good news is with homeschooling, none of that matters. It's like it all is okay in the end.
Well, and that is true. And for any listeners who don't know, I work at a traditional high school. I work at East Chapel Hill High School. And so we're very, very traditional. Like, we have the banner flag of traditional across the front of the school. And that doesn't, I know from working in several different high schools and with thousands and thousands of kids, it doesn't fit everybody, and that's okay. And there shouldn't be any self-loathing or self-judgment or, you know, anything like that. If you don't fit in that environment, in some ways, and I'd like to talk about this more, Debbie, in some ways I feel like when kids force themselves to conform, they lose some of their juice. They lose, you know, some of the
completely.
The
I mean,
things that...
Yeah.
That
she made a decision, I'm not going to be Daisy anymore because it's too painful to be me. And, you know, by middle school, the kids, you know, you had to be really tough to and desensitize yourself. And, you know, so to put on a mask and armor and go act as if every day, it was, you know, it was just intolerable. And it was so unbearable to her that she couldn't even learn in school. That was the final straw that broke the camel's back. She was, you know, at a very expensive private school, and she wasn't learning anything. And, you know, Daisy is so sensitive, she can hear the erasers in the back of the classroom. She can, you know, she picks up visual things. You know, highly sensitive children are often diagnosed, as she was, with ADD, because they appear distracted because her filter is thinner than most of ours. And so visually, she's picking up the birds at the window and that sort of thing. And also, you know, emotions. So if girls are having some kind of fight or whatever, she feels that so viscerally. that she can't focus on what's going on in school. And so she wasn't even learning at this school. And so that was sort of the final straw for me.
Right. So
how do you as a parent, you know you have this child who has this wide open filter and everything is coming at them. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at it from a parental point of view of this isn't going to change. Like my child is not going to change. Mm-hmm. And the world is not going to change.
Right.
So somehow we have to build a foundation or a bridge so mm-hmm. that she's going to be able to function within the world as it is. Mm-hmm. And then I've been given these institutions, which are supposed yep. to prepare my child to go, but they're not working for us.
Right.
So.
Yeah. It's so interesting because I'm telling you, it did not even occur to me that we could homeschool. I kept looking at it and going, I can't do that. I have to work. I've got too much to do. I don't know how to teach her and do all that. Like, what is it? And so I kept thinking that there was another school that was going to work. Oh,
right.
If we go to a Rudolf Steiner school, there, it's yeah. nicer there. If we go to this school, if we go to the above at that school. But, you know, none of it worked for her. And so in the end, you know, I did end up making the decision to homeschool. And I'm going to say that it was far more rewarding than I ever imagined. It was far easier than I ever imagined. The hardest thing that I had to do was get the accommodations for her from the SAT because she had the dyslexia classification, and by far that was the hardest thing. Like the rest of it was not that hard. So anyway, it was like the world. Once I freed her from that structure
yep.
and from from all that pain, she just flourished. It took a little while. There was a winter period before it became spring. And I remember
yeah.
A friend who'd done this before me, and when I had questions, I would ask her. And I remember saying, you know, as I started the conversation, I said I was writing a book, I was moving, it was a crazy time in my life, and I didn't have time to do what needed to be done. And she sat in the room watching episode after episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And this is in the middle of 10th grade. And I would call my friend. I'd go, oh, my goodness, what should I do? And she was like, you know, it's winter a lot of times before it's spring. Like just, and there was a point where she was like sick of, you know, she was sick of watching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And, you know, of course I was going out there and saying, read a book and we're going to find classes soon and we're going to sign up for this. And, interestingly, is how the reading program that I started, that's on my site, started
right.
because at that point when she was, you know, sick and tired of watching TV, believe it or not, because there were no friends around, they were all in school, I said, read the New York Times. It was sitting right there. Read one article a day. And one article turned into two articles, turned into, you know, it just kind of grew, turned into a short story, turned into, a best-selling novel, turned into a classic novel, turned into the Bible, turned into, you know, and it's just growing. But read one New York Times article every day.
So it sounds like before she thoroughly engaged in the home, like she wanted to be homeschooled really badly, but it almost sounds like her version of homeschooling had an escape component to it as well.
She did not want to be in school. When she said she wanted to be homeschooled, it wasn't like she had some vision of, oh, you know, and I'm going to have, you know, English class here. I don't think. She's not here for me to ask her that. But my guess is that what, you know, she meant by saying I want to be homeschooled was I can't be in that building with those people because it hurts too much. And it did.
Right.
It really, really hurt. If kids were bullied, if, you know, even if it wasn't her, if it was some other kid, from the time she was very little, she, you know, had this existential pain. Like, she felt it and would talk about it, and she'd turn in the kid who bullied the kid, and then, but it was her friend, and, you know, anyway, she was just, she felt more deeply than most of us do, and so it was just a painful experience for her.
So she experienced pain in the traditional environment. So yeah. On some deep soul level, her soul is crying out, Mom, save me!
This
sucks!
Yes.
And you as your mom are going, yeah, okay, whatever, you're
like,
fine.
I was like, suck it up and go to school.
This
like
is life, honey. Like, yeah, like, you know, get over it. This is, you know, it's not, you just have to deal with it. But
that's right.
But her voice was to the point where you're like, okay, this is a real deal. So we need to take you out. And so then you started the homeschool. You pulled her out in sophomore year. And what we need to take a break. But when we come back, I actually want to talk a little bit more about the homeschooling, but also about kind of the emotional and social transition. So we'll be right back. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra. Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with the Art of Potential Show. And we are talking about how to take the road less traveled and how to kind of define yourself in a world that is kind of crushing your soul. We're using Daisy as an example. Daisy is the daughter of my guest, Debbie Steer. But I think there's a lot of Daisy's story that we can all relate to. So, Debbie, you were saying that Daisy begged you to take her out of a public school since she was in second grade. You finally did her sophomore year, in the middle of her sophomore year, and you began to homeschool her.
Yeah, although in between that, she went to like four different private schools. So I did take her out of the public school.
Yep.
And she went to various private schools, and, you know, some were better experiences than others, but it was never the round peg for the round hole. And
right.
In fact, the truth is, in the end, so I took her out, as I said, the middle of sophomore year, and she was applying to another school because I thought, what am I, crazy? I can't do this. So she was applying to a Rudolf Steiner school, and there was a website that I always used to look at when I was doing research, and it was called, I think it was Homeschool New York City. And I emailed the woman one day, right about when Daisy was turning in her application, and I said, you know, I see you consult. Can we come see you? And we went up. She lives in the Bronx, and we had a meeting with her. And, you know, like 10 minutes in, Daisy and I looked at each other, and we knew we were not going back to another school. And anybody who meets with her, you know, you'll never want to go to school again. And the truth is that homeschooling really is, I don't know anyone who hasn't had an amazing experience. You know, she homeschooled both of her kids. They went to NYU.
Okay, I am just going to provide a counterpoint for that.
Yes.
Because I think the way that you did the homeschooling works.
Mm-hmm.
You were invested. You were involved. You were monitoring what was going on. You had a curriculum you were using.
Okay,
I have
all this. I just need to rewind and say kind of, but not really. I was also, you know, those were all my intentions, Kristen, but it's not necessarily what happened. You know, the beautiful thing about homeschooling is that when you free them, and I really didn't believe, I mean, I believed, and I still do believe in a classic education.
No, you've been down both paths, which is what, you know.
I mean, for different kids, when I freed her from all that stuff, she actually did pursue, you know, her own intellectual pursuit. And, you know, when she, quote unquote, graduated from homeschool, she continued and does still continue to take classes.
Mm-hmm.
So she's learning for the love of learning rather than because a teacher is making her or some external force is requiring it.
And
believe me, before 10th grade, that would not, I mean, she was completely, like, you know, unengaged in school.
I'm sure she was. Yeah.
None.
And I do think people need to remember, it's natural for the human psyche to resist anyone that tries to put their will on them. So that's a natural and healthy human reaction. And then in school, that actually happens quite a bit. And we kind of tell kids, no, you can't resist. Instead, you must persist. And then you must, you know, exceed and excel and go beyond what's expected of you. But in the natural psyche, like the way you function...
Teenagers.
Right, it is. So in Daisy's world, that happened. The only point I wanted to bring up, because I have seen so many different homeschool scenarios, is you do have to have an engaged parent. I have seen parents who just didn't want to have to deal with school and have pulled their kids out but haven't provided a base. And then that can be a challenge because the kids don't – like Daisy's going to be prepared to go to college. She's going to be prepared to take the SAT.
Right.
You can't homeschool and not provide a curriculum and expect them to come out on the other end ready to to participate, because it doesn't happen that way. That's the
You're right. It does take engagement. I mean, I did not do it in any methodical way, and I really followed her lead. And, but, you know, and I didn't – if I'd started earlier, if I'd had more free time, because I'm always running as fast as I can and gasping for air, and I've, you know, everything's almost falling, but I just get it in time. If I'd had it to do the way I wanted to do it, there's a book called The Well-Trained Mind, A Guide to a Classical Education, and it's just the perfect, you know, it just lays out everything step by step, all the resources and what you should do at what time and how it fits in developmentally. And I mean, it's just, it's so wonderful. But, you know, strangely, I sort of did the opposite, which is, you know, I guess a form of unschooling, in the sense that, I mean, she did academic things, very academic things, a lot. She's continuing to read the Bible, you know, as a piece of literature. She takes a class at the museum, at the Metropolitan Museum. She is constantly going to different spiritual retreats and is learning about Eastern religions. And so, but I let her interests lead. So, but I did, you know, to the best of my ability, you know, I said, you have to take through Algebra 2 and that sort of thing. And yes, you have to take the SAT, which, by the way, you know, that is one of the, I've seen this quite a bit, the homeschoolers are not familiar, most of them anyway, with, at least the ones I've come across, testing. And so a lot of them have a fear of testing. And if I had it to do over again, I would have her take more tests so that when it came time for the SAT, she didn't have this irrational fear of it.
Right.
But I did insist and persist in having her, you know, take it and do well on it. And you know, if I had my druthers, she'd take it one more time, and she might. But she's done very well on it. Anyway, so you're right. You do need an engaged parent. You absolutely do.
Yeah, and somebody who at least understands the rules of society. It doesn't mean you need to play, you know, to conform or to do anything. But you do need to know how to present your child in the best way in their world. Like, I'm kind of, in my mind, the way I see it is, you're building your child's foundation as a parent the best you can. They are also in charge of building it, but it's a collaborative effort so that when they go into the world, whether it's the Bronx, you know, or whether it's, you know, Grinnell in Iowa, whatever the environment is that they want to go into, that they have that foundation to pull from and to be able to say, okay, I don't want to play by these rules, but here's another path I can take that will get me what I want and allow me to be a fully contributing member of society in a much more way that's at peace with my soul. I mean, that I'm at peace with this, because I do think some of, you know, the angst in our society, the people who hate their job or whatever, there's things out there that they've chosen to say, okay, these are the rules, I'm going to play by them, when in reality they want to say, screw this, I want to go out and be a farmer. But they won't give themselves permission to do it. And I, that's what I so love about your story with Daisy. It's kind of like you tried, but she's in some ways stronger than you in that she's like, no, no, and no.
She taught me more about parenting than I ever have taught her about school, that's for sure.
And she's found a way to make herself engage in life that she couldn't have any other way.
I mean, she just, it wouldn't have happened. It was very clear that it was not going to happen in a school environment. She was not engaged at all. The only thing she was interested in was a screenplay that she was writing. And at the time, she was actually, by that point, she was at a boarding school. And they had a very, you know, strict schedule, and there was no time for her to write the screenplay. So she would stay up in her bunk and had a flashlight. I got her one of those little, you know, tables with a light on it that she could put on her lap. And she would write at night after bedtime and then bring it, and they would scan it and send it to me. And I would tell all of her teachers, I'd say, this is what it's about. Maybe you could interest her and tell her about this and have her read that book. And but it just wasn't happening. That was the only thing that she wanted to do, that and improv. And so actually that is sort of how I started when she got home, giving her, you know, things to research. And she did take an improv class.
We're going to have to take a break. Yeah, let's take a break real quick, and then I want to hear more about how you did this. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra, and we are talking about how to take the road less traveled with your child and what the homeschool path is like. And I have an expert on the subject, a mother who is currently homeschooling. Her name is Debbie Steer. So, Debbie, you started homeschooling Daisy her sophomore year of high school. How has your life changed as being a homeschooling parent?
Right. Well, so we started the conversation at the beginning, and I said that I had a very intense career where I commuted to and from New York City from suburbia. And so my days were long, and my attention was, you know, very work-centered, and I had a very sensitive child at home, and it became clear as time went on that, you know, this just wasn't working. And it never occurred to me that I would have to rearrange my career so that I was not commuting and I was home with her, but ultimately that is what happened. And, you know, my job isn't done with Daisy until she's, you know, launched into the world. And so, you know, whereas I had a 24-year career in book publishing and it was very rewarding and successful and I thought that was my path, it became very clear that I needed to be home with my daughter. So I needed to, and I'm a single mom, I needed to figure out a way to have a different kind of career that would work with my daughter's temperament. And she needed me, you know, she needed to be moored. She needed a closer connection. And so thankfully I have managed so far to, you know, work from home since then. But I that was all part of it. And I'm not going to say every parent has to do that because I know many parents who do homeschool and, you know, also go out and work outside of the home. But in my case, you know, she did need me home.
Yeah, that's got to be tough, too, though, to homeschool a child and keep them at home while you're at work. I'd almost think you need tutors to come in or something.
Yes. I mean, there are as many ways to homeschool as there are people who homeschool.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, and so you can do it by computer, which we did not do any of, zero, none. In New York City, where we live, there are classes all over. There are classes in people's living rooms. There are classes in churches or centers where they hold homeschool classes. The Museum of Natural History hosts classes. The Historical Society, the Metropolitan. There's professors from all over the world who take sabbatical and want to teach homeschoolers, you know, a seminar on Shakespeare or Grecian art. So there are so many different ways to get out, and then in some cases, which she did, by the way, and then in some cases we also had tutors come to our house, like in the case of math, because, you know, I couldn't find the right math class for her, and so I got a math tutor that came in and taught her math here, and AP English she took also at home with a teacher, but I could have, you know, grouped up with a bunch of people, and I was short on time. I found a great teacher. She wanted to do it, and so we did it.
Right, and I think that's a really important thing to realize, too. There are entire homeschool communities.
Yes.
Like, you can find, it's interesting, because they almost are like a school.
Yes. Oh, they have cafeterias, they have gyms, they have proms, graduation.
Right.
I mean, they are a very active and interesting community, an engaged community.
Yeah, and it is, and some of them, I think, might you know, it could almost be a charter school of homeschools. Mm-hmm. There's so many different ways you can go about it. But to your point, you can also bring in tutors and things. And I think, you know, I'm just curious, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I'll ask this anyway. What would you say the financial differences are? Because you've been through God only knows how many private school tuitions. Yep. You've been through the public school. Like, what's your take on the whole financial side of things?
Yeah, I mean, you know, believe me, when I first, I mean, I ran out of money. So you can do it without any money at all, you know, with very little money. Or you can do it, you can hire people that will do the whole thing for you, that will, you need to turn in quarterly reports, or I guess every state is different. In New York, you need to turn in quarterly reports, and you can hire people that will do all of that for you for, you know, large sums of money.
Yep.
And, you know, and hire tutors, and you can, I'm sure it would be every bit as expensive, if not more expensive, than a private school education. Or you can wing it, and, you know, I'm sure every state is different in this case, too, but in New York, when you, you know, fill out the paperwork and do what you're supposed to do with the Department of Education, there are benefits that come with that, and some of the benefits include, say, you know, you can take college courses at the community colleges for free and get college credits for them, by the way, or you get, you know, a subway ticket for free. So there's all sorts of perks if you know how to work it. And, you know, for the most part, at least the community that I've found in New York, you know, these are very smart people who have made a decision, you know, not to necessarily be career focused at the moment, and to, you know, all of them obviously have to work, but, you know, so they're all pretty thrifty, and oftentimes people are experts in certain things, and they throw, you know, they host courses at their home, and if you get, you know, six or eight children to take, you know, a neuroscience class that's, you know, a neuroscience professor from Columbia is teaching, it's not that expensive. So I did it much less expensively, much, much, much less expensively than any private school, and certainly than public school with tutors.
Right. Well, that's good to know, because I, you know, and I think as people are listening to the show, I'm hoping too, they get the understanding you have invested a lot of time and energy into Daisy's education.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this has been a project for you both. She has had to follow through on it and had to keep it going and engage. And she's clearly done her part, and you've clearly done yours. But it's not a road to take unless you're committed to it.
It's a snowball effect. It did, you know, yes, I committed to it sort of emotionally more than I committed to it methodically. I didn't really have a plan, and, you know, it just sort of happens. It's not that complicated. I mean, in New York, you need to do what's called, I think it's an IHIP, you know, you have to have a plan at the beginning of the year, and, you know, the internet is filled with plans, and there are millions of books on plans, and you know, I put together a plan. I didn't know what I was doing. And then it got accepted. And then I've never heard of anyone's not getting accepted. And then you do quarterly reports. And so I have sheets that Daisy fills out every day of what she did. And so at the end of every quarter, I would type up what she did. I was always amazed. There was one quarter where she was sick pretty much the whole quarter. And she had to withdraw from all of her classes. And even when she was sick, she did more work during that quarter when she was sick and had withdrawn from all of her classes than any, you know, than all of her years in school put together. I was like, you read that many books? It was unbelievable.
She's like, yeah, I couldn't do anything else.
Exactly. So, I mean, she really didn't leave the house for a few months. So she just read and read and read and read, and wrote a lot also. So, anyway, it wasn't that complicated to do it. And I really just sort of followed her. I mean, I did, you know, a homeschooled kid often is home with you a lot. Not, you know, a lot of times she was running around, but a lot of times she was home. And so, you know, there's a lot of quiet time. There's a lot of quiet time. And so she filled her quiet time with things I didn't do much. I mean, I really didn't. And I hear that a lot about the homeschoolers. They are you know, when you free them up and you let them go through that, you know, I'm bored and let them be bored, it's like...
Yeah, go through the winter. I like how you said that.
To grow, a little greenery.
Yeah. Well, Debbie, thank you so much for all of your insights into how to go about this process. I'm not advocating for homeschooling as much as I want people to know. It doesn't, the traditional school doesn't work for everybody, and it's okay. And you just do need to be aware of the other things that are out there that can be tremendous value to your child. I will have all of Debbie's information on my website, theartofpotential.com. And I also would like for you to check out, I have a new book coming out. It will be coming out in October. It's called Hired at Happy Hour, The Awesome Person's Job Planning Guide. So go ahead and check that out as well. Thank you for listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Hiemstra.